Hey everyone, Whit and I are here to tell you about our May program update. We have some really exciting programs and wanted to kind of get into the details of why we have two programs running this May. We have the Balance and the Burn, and talk to you a little bit about what they are and why they're available.
I think that we have these because you and I are different.
It's the Whitney or the Danielle program.
You get to
right?
choose. Do you want the Whitney program? You want the Danielle program?
All right. So tell me about the Whitney program.
Yeah. The Whitney program is the Balance program. It's really for somebody who is busy this summer and wants to eat healthy, but fit it into their schedule. You can choose if you want 2 meals a day or 3 meals a day, if you want to do 3 days a week or 5 days a week. It is made to fit into your schedule, but you're getting those great Sakara meals in to reset your body, flood you with nutrients, and help you feel good so that while you're out maybe having summer happy hour cocktails or eating those weekend barbecues, you can still come back and feel really good, keep it all in balance.
Balance out. And for those of you who are maybe a little bit more like me, and when you commit to these things, you really want to commit, you're all in, and you want something more programmatic, and then you want, you know, more dramatic results in the end, that's the Burn program. The Burn program is a 3-week program, and we are going to help you through breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we also give you some Sakara protein and greens powder for the weekend. So it's much more prescriptive, and you're going to kind of have to dedicate yourself more. But the results are also a bit more dramatic than the Balance. And, you know, it was made for those of you like me because I really like to hit the reset button like that. I like to say, okay, for this amount of time, I'm all in.
Yeah, you like to go all in.
Yeah, and I want the results like that in the end. And then I try and kind of live in balance the rest of the time. But I don't mind going a bit more dramatic to get the bit more dramatic results. They really motivate me. You can experience everything from weight loss to I experience a huge like cognitive rush. I just feel like I have a lot more brain power. I feel like I reset my gut for the long term. I feel like I have a lot less bloat. I get a lot more regular. And that helps really motivate me for the weeks, months to come.
This Burn program, I will say, was super popular when we offered it in January. I had so many people after it was over asking me to please bring it back. And so, yes, it is back. If you were on the Burn program in January and you want to do it again, here's your chance. Sign up. If you didn't get to try it, maybe you try that one and just go all in with Danielle.
And look, no matter which program you choose, whether it's Burn or Balance, you will experience incredible results. The food is delicious, highest quality ingredients, designed to help you reset your gut. And we love this timing of a program because it really sets you up for summer. So if you have travel plans, you're going to be at the beach a lot, going to maybe be doing those summer barbecues that Whitney talked about a little more than usual, you really want to set the health of your gut and your cells up all summer long.
We'd love for you to join us. You deserve to be nourished. You deserve to feel good in your body and put everything that we've talked about and learned about in these podcast episodes of how we need to take care of ourselves into action. We're here to help you make it easier and make it delicious. So head over to Sakara.com to join us as we get ready to serve all summer. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of speaking with the multifaceted psychotherapist, Danae Logan. Danae specializes in marriage and family therapy with a unique orientation in depth psychology. That's DEPTH psychology. She is a mentee to acclaimed couples therapist, Esther Perel, and offers a holistic approach to mental health and emotional well-being, guiding individuals and couples on profound journeys of self-discovery and healing. Danae helps her clients identify culturally conditioned limiting beliefs so that they can begin to live a life where they are governed by an inner authority in a way that feels meaningful and in alignment with the highest truth of who they are. Her upcoming book, Sovereign Love, is set to publish in May of 2024, promising to offer profound insights into the nature of love and relationships. Please join me in welcoming Danae Logan. Well, Danae, welcome to the Sakara Life podcast. We're so excited to have you here and to get to know you more.
Thank you so much for having me, Whitney. I could not be more excited and happy to be with you.
Well, we start every episode with the same question, which is, what is your mission here on Earth? What are you here to do or give?
I love this question so much. There's something about like having the opportunity to say it that just makes me smile, because I think I feel so right now at this point in my life in alignment with what I know that I'm supposed to be doing. And that is to just shed the layers of programming that I've accumulated over a lifetime to become more of an authentic self so that I can support others in doing the same.
Wow.
And I feel like the more that I heal, the more that I understand sort of like the breadcrumbs I've accumulated along the path of my life up to this point to get here and to be able to support others. But it feels really good to be able to say that.
I love that. That's so beautiful. I think that so many of us that are in kind of this wellness space, the healer space, have gotten here through doing a lot of self-healing and then sharing what we learn along the way, right? Did you have, I don't know, what brought you into this work? Did you have something that happened to you, or what was your calling?
You know, I think from a very young age, I was really struggling with finding comfort in my skin. And I think what I've come to understand is that, similar to what is the case for so many of us, and I would say as women especially, there's a way that we are sort of conditioned to make ourselves a little bit more contained, a little bit more acceptable to society, a little bit less, you know, in our big, wild, bold, feminine energetics that I love to talk about so much. But I think I was kind of that loved make-believe, loved to just sort of like be wild and be out in the backyard and creating all of these different scenarios for myself. And I really struggled to find comfort in my skin. I grew up in an environment that now is a lot more diverse than it was. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, but when I grew up there, like, I was the only Black kid. And so it was always sort of like, I would be aware a lot of times when I would go into places that like people hadn't seen Black people. And so they would sort of look at me or like look in my family and, you know, being the person in class who was different a lot when we would be talking about like Martin Luther King Day or whatever the thing was, right? So I would always be like a little bit self-conscious about being different, and it felt really important to me to fit in. And I think I did a lot of things through adolescence to attempt to fit in a little bit more. I was certainly like a party girl when I was younger, and used to just sort of like anesthetize that discomfort in ways that now I understand were just like me grappling with finding a sense of comfort in my skin. At the time, I just kind of thought that either that's who I was or there was something wrong with me for a while. Now I see that there are so many things about the ways that we socialize girls to constantly be questioning themselves and constantly be feeling like who they are isn't enough, or that they're too big, or that they're not thin enough, or like whatever the things are that we all know. I don't have to tell any women out there what that is, right?
Yeah.
But I think it was like my journey, and like, if I am going to be in this skin, how can I do it in a way that is a little bit more authentic and a little bit, you know, finding peace. I used to say that I just wanted to have peace in my skin. And today I feel like what I strive for is like aliveness, like an authentic sense of aliveness. I wouldn't say I've mastered the piece, you know, some days more than others, but I feel like I know how to get there with a lot more tools than I used to have. But I think the goal now is just to like ride the waves of all of it, all of the different variations of aliveness, you know?
I think what you're talking about resonates with so many people, especially women out there who are craving this feeling of confidence, or just maybe it's self-acceptance even, of feeling good in the bodies that they're in the skin that they're in the status maybe that they're in. Do you have any tips? Like how do you get there? You know, sometimes I will record something to put up on social media and then I'm too scared to hit the post button. And like, I'll second guess myself or think, well, what is this person going to think about that? Or can I handle the potentially, you know, negative or questioning comments that I'll get. And, you know, so then I will just rather be smaller and unheard than put myself out there.
You know, Whitney, it's so funny. What I've come to understand, and when I talk about the deprogramming and sort of the reclamation of some of these elements of self, what I've come to understand is that feeling you're describing that I wouldn't say so many of us as women, I would say like most of us as women experience, is actually really by design, right? And there's so many ways that not only does a patriarchal paradigm need us to really question our power consistently, question how much space we can take up unapologetically, how much we are enough in the skin that we were born in and whatever that looks like. But also a capitalist society needs us to sort of be in the space of never feeling like we're enough and constantly needing to like buy something to give us like a little bit of a hit of, I feel like a little bit more powerful, or I feel like I'm enough in this moment. And so in a lot of ways, I find that my willingness to take up space in the hot mess that I am, you know, just this is me, messy and all, you know, like we were talking about being mamas before, like, yes, I'm showing up like a hot mess to drop off my kid to school unapologetically. And a little bit, that's my form of resistance. Like I get to be enough. I get to be enough as I am. I get to, and this is the thing that I find really empowering is to, it's that Nelson Mandela quote. I can't remember the quote exactly, but as you shine a little bit more brightly, you give other people permission to do the same. And so I feel like
I love that.
Sometimes as I show up and drop off my kiddo as a hot mess at school, I'm like, it's okay, mamas. We can be imperfect. Like we can all be a hot mess together. And I like to think of it as permission giving, and I'll take the lead.
Yeah.
I'll sort of say like, I get to be human. You do too, you know?
Right. And I think, yeah, accepting ourselves more and feeling good in just whatever state we're in does give other people permission or comfort, kind of feeling to be themselves, right? So, you know, my story is I had terrible cystic acne for over a decade of my life, and I wouldn't leave the house without makeup, would not. And, you know, it was a thing like, oh, if I'm going to, you know, be dating a guy and stay over at his house, like, I won't wash my face because then in the morning I'm not going to have makeup to cover up my acne and my scars and this whole thing, right? And I got to a certain point where I started to just build the confidence of the not wearing the makeup piece. And, you know, we talk about things that are scientific on this show. We talk about things that are spiritual and metaphysical on the show. And I do think that moving my energy in that direction of feeling good in my skin helped also for my skin to start to look better. And I still have scars and I still have those feelings of self-doubt and whatever it is inside of me. But the more that I work on those, I feel like the more my scars go away. At the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought in metaphysics, right? Because I think that there is often a tangible of this world explanation, like maybe the science, the medical aspect of whatever it is that we're talking about. And then there's like the soul direction, and I would say curriculum in whatever the struggle is. And I find they are always connected. There is always some aspect of self I am meant to come into deeper layers of understanding of. I'm meant to reclaim something. You know, I was thinking as you were talking, Whitney, how often like our mother's generation were raised with something that is in alignment with what you're describing. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Marvelous Miss Maple. I think that's
yeah,
what
yes.
it's called. She's hilarious, but
of course.
They sort of like give these little like flashes of that generation and what it was like. And I remember when I first was watching, she would like, her husband would go to bed and then she would get up and she would like put her rollers on and she would like, you know, put the face cream on her face and like whatever. And then she would go to bed and then she would set the clock to wake up before her husband woke up. And then she would go take off the cream, put her full face on, her full hair, and then like lay back down and pretend she'd been sleeping, right? And so
yes.
he would wake up thinking like, oh, this is what my wife looks like, right? And the reason I find that so fascinating is because it's like our mother's generation really were raised to believe, and in many ways passed along to us, the belief that you need to be a beautiful object. That is where your worth lies, right? And so many of us have carried the ancestral pain of that. And like, it goes back far when we really start to break down, like, when this began, that we as women acquired a sense of worth in being valuable objects versus like in our humanity. And I think as I'm listening to you, I'm like, God, there's something so potent in all that you've done and the way you show up in leadership for other women and like really like from a holistic space healing. But if you hadn't had that particular curriculum, could you have done that? You know what I mean?
No, I think about that all the time, that it's often our biggest struggles that turn into our biggest gifts. And I had to go through that pain and that experience to be able to learn the things around how to heal those things or, you know, understand what other people might be going through so that then we can relate. And yeah, this was my thing. And so as hard as it was and as much as I hated it in that time I was going through it, now I can look back and have so much gratitude for it, really.
I love that you said this was my thing. There's this line in Laura McCowan's book where she talks about alcoholism and she said, this is your thing. It's not fair that this is your thing, but this is your thing and everybody's got a thing. And I think that the one thing that being a therapist has taught me more than anything else is that nobody gets through this life unscathed. Everybody has a thing that they are grappling with that they don't talk about at dinner parties. But we're all just sort of doing the best that we can, grappling with whatever our thing is. But I love to really normalize, like, what if we all just talked about the thing and said, we've all got things. And it's hard to navigate the things, but that is kind of the collective point of unity, that we're all grappling with a thing of some sort that makes it hard for us, you know?
And so what kind of things do you see in your practice?
Well, I work primarily with couples at this point. And
like,
I
is there common like things in couples that like come up?
Oh, or, yes.
And is there things that like were trending, I don't know, years ago and then trend now? Or is it always throughout history kind of the same things?
Well, I'm so happy you asked this question, Whitney, because I have some strong thoughts on exactly what you just asked. And so the type of psychology that I studied in grad school is called depth psychology. And I'm saying depth like deep waters. Everyone always thinks I'm saying depth psychology, but it's, you know, the study of the collective unconscious. And so that's myths and archetypes and, you know, these threads that have weaved through humanity across generations and various periods in history and across like, you know, different areas and like all of these like collective themes that have come up. So that's like things like the hero's journey, like has been told in different variations and different myths and legends, right? And so I'm saying all of this to say, because I studied depth psychology, I came at the thing of couples work from a little bit different perspective than a lot of the more clinical psychology models, which is sort of like what we were just talking about in terms of like the medical, the like, here's the actual what we see happening. Here's how we can support this couple in communicating more effectively and using I statements and mirroring each other. And all of those things are beautiful. And what I found when I was sitting with couples was there's two things that are making it really, really difficult for us to find relational fulfillment that nobody's talking about. And the two things are, first, that we have been living in what I like to call a wounded masculine paradigm for thousands of years, which basically means that we've been really sort of in a linear, like, this is the way that life is, that it's like really masculine, but like from a distorted masculine space of dominance and productivity. And sometimes, like, you know, just the ways that we have been conditioned to disconnect from our connection to one another, these nuclear family structures, all of these things. But a lot of that has been built upon a foundation of pain. And if we go back to some of what we were saying about like how we as women were conditioned to be objects, a lot of that was for survival early on. You know, women were sort of distributed in the same way that people were distributed according to slavery. It was sort of like you get a little bit of land and you get a wife. And this is sort of like what women were.
Yeah.
You know, they were sort of objects that for their survival, marriage wasn't really about your fulfillment or how much you, you know, loved or enjoyed being with your husband. That wasn't the point, right? And what's the really important aspect of that in terms of like the generational trauma is that if women didn't want to participate in that process, if they didn't want to get married, or, you know, if they were widowed and didn't want to get remarried, a lot of times they were harmed. You know, women were burned alive. Women were harmed by the masculine collective in a ton of different ways for making that choice to sort of say, I don't want to participate in this nuclear family structure. So when we talk about women today really feeling like I have to prioritize being chosen, and if I'm not married by a certain age, that means I'm, you know, not worthy or damaged goods. So a lot of times when we talk about this thing of women really prioritizing being chosen or believing that they're not enough if they're single or all of these different things, it's not sort of like this is an idea that just came to them out of nowhere. These are generational pain points that have been passed down. And a psychologist that I really love, Harriet Lerner, talks about if you're not free to come and go in a relationship, then you're not free to actually be yourself in one. So for so many generations, what our relationships have looked like is I'll say whatever I need to do and I'll be whoever I need to be to maintain this attachment. But if I don't have, like, let's say the financial freedom to leave this relationship, I can't be an authentic self. I might have to like take my rollers out and put full face of makeup on before we wake up in the morning, all of these different things. But what that leads to is a real lack of authentic intimacy in couples. And what I have found is, you know, we haven't ever really done a real reckoning around that. It's just sort of been like, these are just the accepted things of our history. And we don't ever talk about how that's impacted couples, but it is impacting couples. And a lot of the research that's been done on couples work began in the 70s and has sort of continued without anybody really speaking to the fact that in the 70s, women couldn't even have like their own credit cards and bank accounts a lot of times. And so this wasn't sort of like a marriage based on a lot of times, you know, just my fulfillment and my love, but there's a lot of other things that were at play.
You know, listening to you, it makes me think about just how much we're needing to navigate with all of this change, with dealing with, you know, now we do have choice, and a lot of women do have financial independence, can leave relationships, you know, if you're in a certain place and a certain status. And what I'm seeing with a lot of women is that then, because of that, they're also having a hard time getting into a relationship and trying to make it work because they can just leave. And they are like, I'm not going to compromise for you. And something that I hear some friends talk about who are single and trying to date is, where is there kind of a line between this is my boundary and, oh, this is just me not wanting to change and adapt to make a relationship work? Or maybe this is a boundary that I've put up that actually protects myself and doesn't allow me to be intimate, versus like, this is a boundary because you're just a jerk and I shouldn't be letting you treat me like that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I think a couple things, you know, so the first element of what you're describing is that I think no matter what, a relationship is always giving us a mirror into ourselves and into our pain points. So the things that we are attracted to, and this is a little bit of the unsexy aspect of partnership and couples work, is that we tend to sort of be drawn to people that remind us of a pain point from our original caregivers. Meaning, let's say my mom was just really sort of critical and dismissive of me, and I really had a hard time connecting with her, feeling safe with her emotionally. I will subconsciously be drawn to people who recreate that feeling within me. And it'll a lot of times like show up in a little bit of a different way to trick me, right? But I will, the shadow element of what I'm attracted to a lot of times in men that I date will be something similar. Now, I think from a metaphysical perspective, that's beautiful. That's giving me such rich grist for the mill, as we say, to heal that within me. But I have to really come into conscious awareness of whatever's going on with this other person is always showing me to me. Now, you know, a lot of times when I say something like that, people will be like, if someone is abusing someone, that is not about the person who's being abused. And that's not what I'm saying at all. It's sort of that thing of like giving me an opportunity, like you were saying, to get really clear on what boundaries need to be set. Sometimes the most loving response to something is a no, and we're done here. But I have to have those things come to the surface, like we were talking about before, for me to bring it into my conscious awareness. So I believe it's always like a divine assignment, whatever the relational dynamic is. But that's a little bit in alignment with what we were talking about, that we've been in this wounded masculine paradigm. And I believe we're in a period of history where the rise of the feminine is coming to the surface for us to integrate these feminine aspects of ourselves. And that's within all of us. All of us have both masculine and feminine energetics. But what you were speaking to when you were talking about some of the women that you're friends with or that are dating, a lot of times we've just been so disconnected from how something actually feels, because a wounded masculine paradigm teaches us to focus on how something looks. So our highlight reel on Instagram or our holiday cards that we send out to everybody, like that's what matters, not like the felt experience of what's actually going on for me in this relationship. And we focus on what will everyone think if I'm alone or if I break up or what if I never find someone again? All of these things that are like, it's most important to focus on what this looks like, the external, the masculine, versus the internal, the feminine, like how this actually feels inside my body, and honoring that.
One friend that I just had dinner with last week, she was talking about how she recently started dating somebody. It's long distance, and they had been planning trips. You know, they'd see each other every couple weeks or so. And then he canceled one of the trips, and he said he needed to stay home, and he has kids, and he needed to focus on work and be with his kids. And it really hurt her. And so she said, we need to take space. And she said that this kind of hit my boundary. And I didn't know the right advice to give her, because I hear her, it was a couple of us having dinner, and my other friend was like, yeah, girl, like you stand up for your boundaries. And I said, well, I don't know, because I think if you really care for him, maybe you need to go after him and like go for what you want. And maybe he's kind of in a confused state right now or something. But I think like if you're hurt and you're backing away from somebody that's backing away, then it's kind of going to just continue to build a divide. I didn't know the right advice to give her. Like, yeah. What do you think?
You know, I think we're so conditioned to believe that love is about what we get from someone. I don't think that's true. I believe that love is about what we give, and that when we meet the love of our life, it inspires me to want to rise to be the highest version of who I can be over and over as a practice to meet you in that space that you inspire me in, right? Versus, and if you'll like, you'll notice now, like a lot of like the content and the way people talk about love is like, find someone who makes you feel this way and you're meant to do these things. And it's not that, hopefully, and certainly we need reciprocity in a relationship, and we don't want to be in the space of overgiving. And when we are overgiving, normally that's about our fears versus our actual love for that person. But I think that if I love someone, I want to be curious about what's going on for them. We all, this is so human, but we all get in the habit of offering our partners, the people we're in relationship with, the least generous interpretation of what's happening for them. And it becomes like, if I were to come into the most generous interpretation, the most open willingness to hear and be curious, but like genuinely curious, not genuinely curious to like contort, but like what's going on really, right? And a lot of times it's like, I find with couples, we forget to be friends with this person, right? It's like, you're my person, you owe me X, Y, and Z, and you're not showing up and pulling your weight. And of course, these are all the things that we as humans are going to feel. But if we bring it back to how this person is doing the best that they can with their fears, their pain points, the things that they're navigating on a day-to-day basis, and we try to really show up and care for those things, I feel like we meet those moments a little bit differently. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't communicate honestly about our disappointment and say, I'm not going to lie, I'm heartbroken that I don't get to see you because I was really looking forward to it, but I also want to hear more. Like, tell me about what's going on for you. I'm obviously here and open to hearing it, but we're so quick to go to the cutoffs. And I think a lot of times the cutoffs are just a little bit easier. They're understandable. They're about us attempting to protect our hearts, but they don't really bring us into deeper layers of intimacy ultimately, you know?
Yeah, that curiosity really can build intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely
allowing the other person to go deeper into their emotions and feelings and authentic self, like you're talking about. I think to fall in love and be in love, because I also, you know, hear people talking about how it's just so difficult to find the love these days with all of the apps.
Mm-hmm.
That I think I heard you talk about this, that we're not that complicated of people. Like, you can fall in love, but we're not setting up the right circumstances or coming into it in the right way, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's something about these dating apps. And listen, people find love and connection on dating apps, and I think that's beautiful. And the larger and about these dating apps that we've really got to be honest about is they are not actually in the business of supporting us in finding love. They are not in the business of supporting us in feeling good about ourselves. Like, that's
right.
Not what makes people spend money. And if you look at the fact that these are, you know, membership-based apps, what they want is for you to feel a little bit defeated, constantly scrolling with something that
keeps coming
makes
back.
You feel, yeah. They,
and, if you get married, that's not a good retention. For them
as
a business. Yeah.
Whatever they tell you, that is not what they're interested in, is you finding authentic connection with another person. And I think that there are ways that, like, this is like the continuance of that paradigm we were talking about. You know, like, AI is here. It's not even something that's like in the distant future. I think more and more, what is going to be really important and valuable is for us to figure out ways of highlighting and celebrating the human aspects of ourselves. Because what we're talking about when we talk about like those dating apps is algorithms. And, you know, I'm not a tech person enough to understand exactly what it is, but there's a very specific feeling and emotion that they are eliciting within you psychologically, the same way that is happening on social media, to keep you wanting to come back and in this process longer, right? So all that to say, if you feel defeated on dating apps, that's kind of by design, right?
Right. So what do you do? Where do people find love? I mean, where I thought you were going with that, I got chills, is like AI coming and we're all going to be relying on it so much to write to each other. And I mean, people already have virtual avatars or these super hot AI women that are on Instagram now. They're fake. They're not even real people, but now we have to compete for attention, whatever else, with AI. I do believe that we are energetic beings, like that, where we can feel each other's energy even through a dating app. When you write something that has a feeling and you are feeling something when you write it and then you hit send and the other person reads it, they can feel the emotion that you were feeling when you wrote it. I do believe that's a thing. When we, in the early days of Sakara, we were writing emails to clients and everything, and we would talk about that make sure that you feel good when you're writing an email to a client, that you are smiling when you hit send, because they are going to feel that on the other side, and they do. So that makes me hopeful for humanity, that we have to lean into our humanness more.
I could not agree with you more. I'm like, my face hurts from smiling as you're talking, because it's so tapped into what I believe is the solution. And you know, if we go back to that time we were talking about, like, pre-patriarchy, and, you know, listen, Wait,
there's a time pre-patriarchy?
And that's the thing. Like, we were a matriarchal society at periods in history. It was so long
ago. Tell me more.
That we, right? Excuse me? Right? That we don't even know that that was a thing. But a lot of what that looked like was what the energetic of the collective feminine way of being was. Now, listen, I actually don't think we're shifting to a matriarchal culture. I think we're shifting to a more integrated way of being. But I do think that it is necessary for us to really tap into what you're saying, which is the feeling of our shared humanity and our connection. And I'm sure you've noticed this. Like, look at your community. People are so hungry to come back into conversations about, like, how do we heal in a more holistic way? How do we be in, you know, it's so funny. Like, if I have a client that's having a panic attack, I will say, do something for me. Go outside, take your shoes off, and just like walk around in the grass if you have some close by for a few minutes. Just like take 5 minutes and then come text me back. And Whitney, when I tell you, I've never had one client who wasn't like, oh my God, I'm okay now. It's like magic, but it's like we know how to innately heal and we also innately like know how to connect with one another. But that is the rise of the feminine, that collaborative way of being together. I think that we are shifting a little bit away from like a nuclear family structure and that way of doing, and that won't be immediate. But I think in the long term, that will be the result to a more collectivist way of being, and that people will put less of an emphasis on the like, I need to be partnered to this one person to be complete, where it's more in alignment with when it's justified because of who this person is and our shared vision and how much we really inspire one another, then we will partner. But until then, we have a whole community of people that we are filling up our lives and our experiences with and traveling with and all of the things. Because what I find with couples is that this nuclear family structure just puts way too much pressure on a relationship. It's like one person is meant to be, you know, my travel buddy, my confidant, my therapist, like all the things. And we're inevitably disappointed with this person and feeling like they're letting us down, but it's too much. Like no other person can be that for us. They don't have the capacity, you know?
I totally agree. I've even been mentioning that to some people lately, that how important it is, I think, especially for women to have a close group of women around them where they can unload their emotions and be like, I just need to tell you about this and what happened and what I'm feeling, because we need to do that. And if we're constantly doing that to our partner, they could be like, oh, I just can't carry your emotions all the time. Whereas like, I think with friends, we're not carrying each other's emotions. We're just listening and being a container space, right? For you to even to just think through what's going on. You're thinking through what's going on for you, and you can have some aha moments through that. But if we don't have that community around us, we can either, put too much tension and pressure on the relationship, or just feel lonely and like that we don't have an outlet for that.
Yes, absolutely. But what I find is interesting too is that what you're describing with the men in our lives sort of being like, oh, I can't listen to all of this, is a lot of times that men have been so socialized to disconnect from their feminine and their ability to be vulnerable and really nurture one another. And men really need community as well. But I find even more than we as women don't have that connection to like really authentic. I mean, I think we as women actually do a better job a lot of times, but men don't have that. They'll like golf with their buddies, they'll watch sports with their buddies, but they do not talk about how they're really doing. And a lot of times what that ends up looking like is them attempting to get all of that from the women in their lives, which tends to put women in a little bit of a maternal energy with men. So it's sort of like, if I'm holding your emotional landscape for you, I sort of feel like mommy, right? Which is not really great for our relational dynamics in the big picture, as you can imagine. It's probably the most common thing that couples come to see me about is a lack of desire, and that they're really struggling with their sex lives because men just don't have other outlets. And society teaches men you can feel emotions through anger or sex, but that's it. And so this is like, they're almost like self-soothing a lot of times and self-regulating through sex, whereas we as women are more aroused in the experience of really feeling seen and really feeling like, you know, you are present and seeing me. And we don't feel that when we know this isn't about me. This is just sort of about you self-soothing, you know?
And so what do you usually recommend in that case?
certainly that men do more to like create a sense of community. I think it's a sense of self in so many ways. I love to say like we are a society of uninitiated men, and that shows up in so many different landscapes from, you know, our nuclear families, but also like in our political figures and in like all of the leadership. There's just all of these men who are sort of really leading from a space of fear versus a sense of like a grounded self. And it's like power is where I get a sense of like bigness, or the woman who's on my arm and the yachts and all of these things that are just sort of not really grounded in like, how do I really feel about myself? And I think without that, it's like a bucket that we're trying to like pour a sense of self in with like a hole in the bottom. It needs to be corked. It needs to be really something that I feel innately within me. And then again, if we go back in history, there was a time when men used to take young boys out and initiate them into manhood. And they would like go out in the woods. I don't know exactly what they did out there.
Yeah.
they would like learn to be a man, and they would like show themselves what they were made of. And they would like really build a sense of confidence and self. And we don't have initiations of any kind really in our society anymore. And these are the things that depth psychology made me sort of tune into, like these things are missing societally, and it's not without a cost. It's like, this is how this is playing out without us having these actual rituals that we need as humans to evolve, you know?
Self-confidence.
Yeah.
Coming back to that again.
That's right.
Women needing self-confidence, men needing self-confidence. It might show up in different ways, but it comes back to that. And I do think that community helps with the self-confidence of feeling accepted by others, and that you aren't just alone in this world, but even having some level of accountability to other people. If you have people around you that you have to be accountable to, it can, I think, not just help you stay in line and be a better individual, but it can help you feel more confident knowing that there are people there with you in this world.
Mm. Absolutely. You know, I think what you're speaking to is the innate need that all of us have for a sense of belonging. And that, like, you know, in Indigenous communities, when a baby is born, the entire community comes to welcome that baby. And it's like, welcome, you belong to us. You are so necessary.
Yes.
And we're so grateful that you're here.
Yes.
And we are a society where we are taught very young, like, you need to earn that. Like, you need to hustle for belonging. You need to get famous. And you need to do something to, like, prove you are worthy of belonging. And so we're like constantly chasing that feeling of enough for a lifetime. But what I find that that does is, instead of creating authentic community, it creates a desire to fit in, which is very different than actually belonging, right? When I fit in, it's sort of like I'm constantly in that space of, like we were describing with Marvelous Miss Maisel, like if you ever really saw me, if you ever really knew me, I believe you won't love me, the truth of me, right? Whereas when I belong, I know who I am exactly as I am is welcome here in that same way that those communities might welcome a baby. But in order to do that, we've got to sort of go inward and sort of say, you know what? I've got to bet on me. And that's the self-confidence piece, like you were describing, like I'm going to like bet on being me and the people that are meant to love me, the people that are meant to stay in my world. I have to bet on the fact that they'll stay here. And the ones that don't, well, maybe they're not my people, right? But what that filtration system ends up doing is it gives us that sense of confidence that, like, I am worthy. And if I show up as my authentic self, the people that are meant to stay in my sphere will, and the ones who aren't will fall away as they're meant to. And that's okay. But I got to bet on me either way.
Yeah. And ultimately, I think that's what we want in our partners too, is for them to be sitting in that place where they feel like their whole selves and they feel confident and alive, like you're talking about. And I think in some partnerships, I don't know, we can get down on each other and get in this pattern of not lifting each other up.
Something I really encourage couples to do, and this is a little bit of like suspend your disbelief because it can just be helpful. is to act as though your partner's not yours. And I talk a lot about like the ownership template that we were all raised with. And certainly that goes back to what we were talking about in terms of the objectification of women and patriarchal standards of like what relationships are. But also, I think that we do this just as much as women, right? Like, I can't tell you how often I will be sitting with one of my single clients and she'll be like, I met him. I met my husband. And I'm like, oh, did you? 2 dates in. Like, tell me more. I'm excited, right? And it's just very like, there's so much we don't actually know about this person, but I want to claim them as mine because then that makes me feel like I have the thing, the object that I've been longing for completion. Now, what that ends up leading to years into a marriage, I feel like is so often couples will like not even be listening for what their partner is going to say. They're just completing their sentences for them. Like, I feel like I know you. I barely even see you. And I'm annoyed with you, whatever the things are. Whereas if I sort of say to myself, my relationship with this person isn't promised, I don't know that they're going to be here tomorrow. And it's such a mindfulness practice. But if I held them that way, how might it shift the energetic between us? How might I feel a little bit different? Like if I imagine tomorrow,
right,
like they're going to leave in some way, yeah, and I won't have them, I might hold whatever the thing is that they're doing that's annoying me a little bit more differently. Or I might hold the conversation with a little bit more curiosity versus contempt, you know?
Yeah. No, that's beautiful. I feel like the gut microbiome is something we talk about in every episode of the Sakara Life podcast. And I think people just still don't understand just how profound the gut microbiome is and how important it is to your overall health. It affects every system in your body, from your hormone health to your brain chemicals, your digestion, your metabolism, your sex drive. It really is the epicenter of our health. And yet people
are getting like half of the fiber, daily fiber they should be getting. I mean, when we set out to create Sakara, we anchored it on gut health because we both had such gut dysbiosis and imbalanced microbes. And we know the number one indicator of a healthy gut is having a diversity of microbes, but nobody really knows what that means or how to get it. Or I think it's really confusing to people. It's like, okay, I have all this bacteria in my gut and what? I need to take care of them? It's hard to imagine how microbes in your gut can impact your cardiometabolic health or your mental health or your hormonal health or your fertility, all of these things. But every time, like it's so entrenched in the literature at this point that every time you look at any disease, you can start to correlate changes in the microbiome. So if we can start with the gut and kind of like work backwards, that's still an amazing approach to overall health.
Probiotics are really important. We've been talking about probiotics for a long time, but I think more and more people are starting to talk about prebiotics. And it's something you and I talk about a lot, about fibers, plural. There's not just one type of fiber. There's multiple types of fibers. And they go in and they feed those microbes within our gut. That's what our microbes like to eat. If you want to be building up a healthy ecosystem of good microbes in your gut, they like to eat prebiotic fibers. They like to eat polyphenols, resistant starches. That's what they like to live on, and that's how they're going to proliferate in your gut.
Well, we are so excited to talk about our Sakara fiber super powder, you guys, because it took us 3 years to make. And we really made it because if you think about what is one of the most important things you can get into your diet every single day, it really is fiber. I mean, 95% of Americans are not getting enough fiber every single day. We're in this fiber epidemic. And so we really wanted to create a fiber that would really help you hit that 35 to 50 grams of fiber, which by the way, you guys, most people are getting under 15. you know, they say you should get 25, but when you study functional medicine, they say you should get 35 to 50 grams. And if you eat Sakara breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're getting 35 to 50 grams every day. And so in creating this product, we thought, how can we help people reach that number who can't eat our meals? If that's the number one determining factor of a healthy gut, how can we help people really build those healthy guts? So you get 6 grams of fiber from 10 sources of fruits and vegetable. We have prebiotic fiber in there as well as digestive enzymes. So it's not just fiber like your grandmother's fiber. It's fiber from 10 different sources plus these digestive enzymes and prebiotics that really help you stay regular, decrease bloat, help with satiety.
Ooh, we're making fiber sexy again.
It's about time.
You can find more details and enjoy 20% off your first order with code POD. That's code POD at checkout for 20% off your first order. Order now. So, Danae, you have a new book coming out. When exactly is it coming out? And who's it for? Who did you write this book for?
Thank you, Whitney. Well, so it's coming out May 28th, and it's called Sovereign Love, A Guide to Healing Relationships by Reclaiming the Masculine and Feminine Within. And the reason I wrote the book is that as I was, you know, sitting with couples and thinking about all of the different things that we've been talking about that come up so often in relationships, what I realized was most of the time what couples are doing is competing for energy. And what that means is like sort of attempting to negotiate the way that I feel like you should be showing up in this relationship dynamic and attempting to like control or pull your energy to where I believe it needs to be, versus taking responsibility for my own energy. And something that I've come to understand, I guess, just like in my own life process and path, is like the only person that I get to have any control over is myself. But when I take control of my own energy and like intentionally make a decision about how I'm going to show up in any interaction or any situation, I feel deeply empowered by that. But also, I'm just a lot more open. I have the capacity to show up for the other people in the room a lot more present versus if I'm in that reactionary state or that irritated space of feeling like I need them to be a certain way that they're not being. And I'm going to speak heteronormatively for a second, but what ends up happening so often in couples, let's say a man falls in love with a woman, he will fall in love with a lot of times her in her innate feminine energy, which will be her ability to be like playful and radiant and go with the flow and like really trusting in him and like seeing all of these beautiful qualities that he holds as a man. And then he will want her to stop being in that feminine energy once they're in a relationship for a while. And he will want her energy to be a little bit more like how he processes things, which is like linear, the structure, not changing, like all of these like masculine ways of being. And the same way for women, a lot of times like a woman will fall in love with a man and like the extent that he is steady and creates a sense of safety and like the way that he like does things like maybe says like, we're going to dinner at this place, I'll pick you up at 7, whatever, right? And then those are the things that like she'll feel like, oh, he just like really takes charge and that feels like really amazing and I love it. But then a few years into the relationship, he'll be like, you know, not expanding, not growing, not multitasking in all of these very feminine ways of showing up that he doesn't naturally default to, right? So the book is just an exploration of certainly the ways that we've been socialized around gender and how we can reclaim some of the things that maybe don't fit and aren't true anymore as we're evolving, but also really what energetics are and how to take responsibility for our energy. Because I found that as I was working with couples and I would start to explain the differences between masculine and feminine energetics, and I would give them like worksheets and be like, okay, so when you're in this space and you're in your masculine energy, and a lot of times we as women have really been socialized, especially as mamas, a lot of times we like don't even realize how much we're socialized to sort of live in a wounded masculine armor and like, I do all the things, I will tackle this, I've got this under control, all of these things that are beautiful in a more healthy masculine energetic. But when we're in a wounded space of like control or contempt or irritation from that masculine energetic, it can create a lot of disharmony in our relationships. And so when we're in that space, it's like, how do I reclaim some of my healthy feminine energy and really like nurture myself, trust a little bit more in life, let go of control, all of these things. But then with the men, a lot of times my brothers, I find that society has really conditioned men in relationships, especially a lot of times, to embody more of their wounded feminine a lot of times. And so it's sort of like happy wife, happy life. I just need her to see me and want to have sex with me and pay attention to me, and why aren't you loving me? Which ends up feeling like really wounded feminine energy to the woman in the dynamic. And so it becomes his responsibility to shift in that healthy masculine energetic of like, I got me, I see me, I contain me, I take care of me, and I have my own back a little bit, right? So that's that healthy masculine containment that he can offer himself. And anyways, I was sitting with couples and I would be breaking this down and they'd be like, is there a book we can read about this? And I'd be like, there's not, because I've just been sort of seeing it unfold. But I believe that this is sort of the collective shift in consciousness as the feminine is rising and integrating within all of us. And so
Wow. That's
the book that I wrote. So hopefully, you know, it's really for couples, but anyone who wants to understand how to take control of their own energy a little bit more.
Yeah. And really, I think that if you're wanting a change, if you're wanting a change in your relationship, having this kind of reflection and this understanding of different dynamics and energies, I think can be so helpful. And just getting curious about yourself and about your partner, like you were talking about, and this book sounds like a great way to do that. It's been wonderful to have you on the podcast, but before you go, we have to ask you, can you please offer a light work practice for our Sakara Light listeners?
Okay. I love this too. So I would say one of the things that I talk about so often that I feel like people get tired of listening to me talk about it, but it's been such a game changer in my life, is something I heard Wayne Dyer say so many years ago that I loved, was the mantra of the lower self is I need more. The mantra of the higher self is how do I serve? And so what I really love to do for myself and, you know, give my clients the reminder often is when I feel like I'm being shortchanged or people aren't showing up for me in the way that I want, or whatever the thing is that is making me feel like I want more attention, more love, more admiration, whatever, how do I serve? How can I show up in this moment and be a little bit more in the space of giving, supporting, offering? How can I fill myself up a little bit so that I can pour from the overflow into the people around me?
So beautiful. I love that. For me, that was a huge shifting, like ritual or technique that I started to incorporate into my life, was when I would get really down on myself or on my skin, and I'd be looking in the mirror and just hating on myself, picking at myself, I would stop and I would think, how do I serve? And try and shift that energy into doing something for somebody else, you know, call my mom, send somebody a nice text message, see what I could do to volunteer my time somewhere. And instead of focusing on myself and the things I didn't like, I would think about, yeah, how can I serve?
It's amazing. There's an alchemy that happens when we get out of our head and into the space of supporting others. It's like magic. I think that's why I became a therapist. It really is. It's like you instantly feel better. It really is.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to really incorporate that into my week ahead and just, yeah. That's going to be my mantra. Maybe I'll even like write it down and post it somewhere so that I can think about that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Love chatting with you.
Such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much, Whitney.